Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org, the home of free speech. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send money, because free speech, it isn't cheap. And also, while you're doing that, go to nationalbugle.com. You can look at all the great articles that Mark Dankoff and I post. And also, you'll notice that you can download the Co-Certified app and make 2020 year one of your non-kosher certified lifestyle. Today, I have with me somebody who is not a stranger to RBN audiences. I have Ryan Dawson. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's always good to be on RBN.
It is. And you were substituting for Mike Rivera recently, and so I'm sure our listeners are familiar with you.
Yeah, I did it when I could, but it was like the 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. slot, which is real hard.
That is a tough slot, but we appreciate your service. So, you are well known for your various videos. You produce a lot of documentary videos on a lot of subjects. So you've got a lot of background on the Epstein thing. You know a whole lot. You know a whole lot about 9/11, and of course the Israel-Palestine business. And there's also something else I want to get to with you, maybe later in the show about Putin and Russia and Chabad Lubavitch and Dugin and all this stuff. But why don't we start off with the deal of the century?
Dugin is Putin's John Bolton.
Well, I mean, maybe he was Putin's John Bolton.
No one's as bad as John Bolton, but, you know, well, as far as analogy.
I mean, like, Bolton got to be national security advisor. I don't think Dugin's ever gotten quite so close to power. But
right.
We'll get
Bolton
there.
Bolton also got fired, though.
Yeah. So, first off, the deal of the century, isn't it great that President Trump finally got this sorted out and now we can move on to other things?
He just made it 10 times worse. The Palestinian Authority with Mahmoud Abbas has decided to cut all ties with Israel and the United States, and they're probably going to abandon the Oslo Accords, which would mean $2.5 billion that Israel will have to pay because Palestine is no longer going to cooperate with Israel on security. And there's going to be retaliation because what they offered the Palestinians was a complete slap in the face. There was no right of return. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people alive
today
who are older than Israel.
Let's explain some of these terms.
Sure.
Okay, so the right of return is so Palestinians who were ejected from their homes in what is now considered Israel, they had their homes taken away. This has been a demand for the past 70 years that they should be allowed to come back, right? That's what we're talking about.
For example, my grandparents are older than Israel, a couple decades older, actually. And so there are a lot of people alive, and they might be in their 70s, 80s, or 90s, that were physically removed from Palestine and the parts of it which are now called Israel, and they cannot go back. And none of their offspring can go back. There are people that live in Gaza that can't go to the West Bank even.
It seems to me that every year we're hearing about the survivors of Holocaust survivors, or their descendants, the children of Holocaust survivors, demanding maybe the right to go back and take property that they say was seized from them 80 years ago. So why is this different?
Well, this is different because, the Allies won the war, and so they can get away with that. And I'm fine with returning property to anyone who had property stolen. But what was stolen from Palestine was more than just personal property. It was a country. It was land. And this argument that, say, Palestine never exists, like, basically every argument a Zionist makes, whatever they accuse their opponent of is what they're guilty of themselves. Israel never existed. Palestine has been there since the times of Alexander the Great. And whether it was a province inside another empire or not, and it's been both, it was part of the Roman Empire, part of the Ottoman Empire, part of the British Empire, and in between that it's been an independent state. It's always been Philistines and Palestinians, and they've lived there with continuity for thousands of years. A lot of European Jews moved there in the 30s and 40s. Really, after World War I, they were pushing to get the Brits to give it to them. And they want to live there exclusively. And the settlements they're building, this is like more than one kind of person can live on the same dirt. Look at America or most places, right? But not when you're a Jewish supremacist. They want to believe that, no, this is Jewish land and a Jewish state, and Jews should live here. And they kick the Arabs out of the West Bank physically with the military, and they build Jewish-only colonies. And they call them settlements. I call them racial colonies, because that's what they are. And Trump's deal said all the settlements that are annexing land, they're legitimate, and Israel gets to keep them. And Palestinians are not ever, you're never going to have right of return. And also the capital is going to be Jerusalem, and it's going to be completely under Israeli control. When all international laws prior to that decided that this was a co-capital and a shared city for the three Abrahamic religions. As I know, it's going to be completely Jewish, and what they mean by that is racial, not just religious. It, to them, not to me, but to them, it's one and the same. Jews are a race and religion and an ethnic group. It's whatever is, you know, expedient for themselves as a Zionist state. It's whatever definition fits to the current advantage, right? And it can change. So, but they physically have taken this land away from people, and they abuse them. They have all these children they put in prison. They shoot people in the balls for sport. They have snipers just killing people if they give unarmed protests near the cage wall in Gaza. Israeli soldiers will murder them.
Just coming near
smash
the wall.
Houses down.
Just coming
just
near the wall.
Not trying to climb it or anything,
yeah,
but
just
protesting
coming near. Just coming near the wall. Now imagine the United States with the border with Mexico. If people come over, I mean the fence or the river or whatever, they get to stay the moment they touch a magic American soil, and there's nothing you can do when they're on the other side. So, so we mentioned the right of return.
It'd be different though. It'd be like if you took a, let's say Mexico built a wall halfway up into Texas, and then took all the territory in between, and then sat up on the wall and started shooting Americans that got near the
right.
wall protesting and stolen everything.
And then let's just say China gave the deal of the century and said, okay, not only does Mexico keep all of that land up to the wall, but on the other side of the wall, all of the barrios in Dallas and Houston, those are going to go under Mexican authority.
Right. Or saying, we're just going to make New York and Boston and San Francisco Chinese. Or Mexico, whatever, you know, and it's racially exclusive, and you're not allowed to live there. People that live there with continuity, and people, the language has been replaced, the culture has been replaced, the people have been physically replaced. So imagine Muslims going to Europe, let's say, and they just take two-thirds of Sweden of their own, and then they start going into the white areas of Sweden and bulldozing down houses, and if the Swedes do anything about it, they shoot them. And when the Swedes get violent because of that, then they're terrorists. And the Muslims that move there are just trying to defend themselves from land that was clearly Sweden and always been Sweden, right? And Palestine had always been Palestinian. And it had been, you know, Arabic and mostly Muslim or Christian. Jews were the super minority. There have been Jews there just living there as 2 or 3% of the population, but the Hebrews are not the problem. These are Ashkenazis that moved there. In the 20th century.
So the people who, that 2 or 3% population, they would be called Mizrahi. They would follow the Sephardic rituals, not the Ashkenazi rituals. We talk about, it's occupied, often is referred to an internationally considered occupied territory. But the Israelis always call it disputed, not occupied. And the thing is that under the Geneva Conventions, it is a war crime to import a civilian population into occupied territory. And this is exactly what they've been doing for decades, and they get away with it. One other thing I want to raise, because we're talking about the right of return, the Palestinian right of return, and this is not to be confused with Israel's law of return. And the law of return says that any person anywhere in the world who can show that they have at least one Jewish grandparent, they are allowed to immigrate to Israel, regardless of whether they have they can document any ancestors whatsoever who have even ever been to Israel or Palestine, whether they themselves have ever been there. It's called return, the law of return. Isn't that odd?
Yeah, return. I'll give you an anecdotal story that's funny and sad. A friend of mine, he's just purged from Facebook, and he worked for Press TV UK, which was kicked off YouTube, no reason given. His name's Robert Inlakesh. He was in the West Bank. And there was a Palestinian girl there named Malak and a Jewish settler named Becky. Blue eyes, pale as could be. And they were talking about Palestine. They're sitting on a bench together. And Becky's rubbing sunscreen all over her arms, because if she goes outside in that desert environment, she's going to burn. Mm-hmm. And then, like, as she's rubbing sunscreen on her arms and saying, "This is our land. I'm returning here." And she's whiter than Casper's ass. And like, do you really think that God gave you land? Like, really? The cosmic creator of everything gave you, Becky, this house. And that was her mindset, that like, well, we were here 3,000 years ago, and now we're quote-unquote returning. And heck with the people that are also here, and were also here 3,000 years ago. You guys gotta go. And that whole story, for people who aren't of that religion, that of King David and all, is just a fiction. There was nobody that killed a giant and had a kingdom, and Solomon with his magic ring moving demons around to build a temple and all. It's just nonsense. It's about as real as King Arthur. And it would be like saying, based on the King Arthur story, somebody has a land title in England or whatever.
That's King Arthur, how dumb it is. King Arthur was Celtic. So does that mean the Scots or the Irish get to go back to England? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, England used to be part of Rome, too, so should we give it to the Italians? Like, this territory flip-flops, you know, that Carthage used to have Sicily, and then the Romans had it, and the Greeks used to have it before that. Like,
so when,
you don't inherit land that way.
When was it, what year was it that God just said, okay, this is the real estate map? What, I mean, I kind of missed that.
Well, God didn't say anything, but what happened was the UN officially, like legally, I guess, did the mandate. There was
League of Nations.
Yeah, well, which morphs into the UN later.
Which morphs into the UN.
League of Nations would do that. But, you know, there isn't really a clear day, because based on, possession is 9/10 of the law, if you're going like that. I would say in 1929 is when the terrorism with Haganah and Palmach started really ramping up. And all through the 30s, Jewish terrorists were blowing up buses and trains and ships, embassies, you name it. Terrorists were attacking targets. And during World War II, the Brits, I mean, like a lot of the British soldiers in Palestine, they only had 2 bullets in their gun. They couldn't afford anything. They were fighting with the Germans and everyone else. And Jewish terrorists took advantage of this situation, and they got diaspora to move from Poland and Germany to Palestine. And they were, a lot of people bring up the Liberty incident, you know, from 67 and where the Americans were killed, but there was the SS Palmach Patria that the Palmach blew up. And the SS Patria had over 1,200 people on it, and 55 British sailors were murdered on that day, and there were Jews killing other Jews. They sank their own ship to prevent it from leaving. They wanted a demographic majority in Palestine, and these people were leaving to go to Mauritia. And they blew up the boat, and things like that happened all throughout the 30s, and it's just sort of a missing chunk of history, because there's a much greater war going on in Europe with World War II, that what these Jewish terrorist groups were doing is overshadowed. is overshadowed by, you know, the events going on in Germany and Italy and Japan and so on.
Right.
So that's when they started moving people in and physically taking land, physically taking houses. And this is all long before 1948, right, before the war. the reason there's such an uprising is because these people had already encroached and been taking land and killing people and massacring people. And then they stole weaponry from the United States and around the world in preparation for the war of 1948. And I'm talking planes, machine guns, ships. They took it all. And they massacred people. They chopped the heads off of over 200 people in Deir Yassin. And they kept a few Palestinians in cages as trophies to parade around Jerusalem in a parade. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of just taking another country's land and moving their people out and moving your own people in, there's a lot of audacity there. And it's not an easy thing to do. Now, the Jews have been very, very patient. And this, as you're pointing out, this has been going on for a century or more. I see three elements here, and I think it's a careful balancing act between them. So one, you've got the gradual acquisition of territory, so controlling territory and then having your laws enforced on it, annexing it. So even the map, you know, there's different levels of control and things like that, but they've been gradually acquiring territory. The second element is demographic, moving your people in, getting rid of the other people. So the demographic movement of people, the replacement of people. And then the third is managing, because it's all illegal, managing the public relations of it. Because what you're doing is illegal, but you need to keep it from there from being too much opposition, too much outrage. And if you go too fast on number one or on number two, then you're liable to get this backlash with number three. And so
it's a bad PR move,
right? So
there's a fourth thing they do is they make living in Palestine unlivable to get people to move out,
to get
then you're not allowed to come back,
right?
So the checkpoints and the just kind of daily low-level to medium-level harassment, you know, arresting you, breaking into your house, throwing tear gas through your window, night raids, forcing you to drive on different roads, putting cages around your house, dumping trash on top of you, like not allowing your kids to have to go some convoluted route just to get to school and
abducting and even murdering your family members.
Yeah, killing babies, setting houses on fire, and no punishment happens to the arsonist.
Or demolishing,
burning your olive trees, like, yeah, all of that. They make it unlivable to where anyone who can afford to get out does. But as far as, like, why don't they speed up number one and number two, it's not just because of bad PR. It's a balancing act between a lot of companies in Israel enjoy the near slave labor of Palestinians that are allowed to come and work and leave, and this, like, $2 a week type of slavery. So they, you know, they want some of them there so they can exploit them from a labor point of view. But they don't want them living in Israel. And they want to keep encroaching into the West Bank and annexing more and more land.
Well, yeah, so in the 70s and 80s, I think there was a lot more
genocide.
In the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of the use of Palestinian labor. I think since the first Intifada, that's been scaled back somewhat. I have a question. How about the importation of non-Jewish, non-Muslim labor from, you know, places like the Thailand or whatnot? How much is that becoming a thing?
Yeah, at first they were getting, they get mercenaries and stuff from Sudan and places like that. But of course, if you're black in Israel, you get to live in basically an internment camp. Mm-hmm. People, if you're black and walking outside at night, that's a crime. And you have to go to your check-in, basically a part-time prison. They have a lot of Eastern Europeans that they use for sex slavery out of the Ukraine and areas like that. And they have people from India and in all over Yemen or whatever, the desperate, that they'll come in as, it's human trafficking. Yeah. I mean, they're just treating like absolute dog shit and
doing the work that the Israelis don't want to do. Okay, we are up on the break, but we'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
So we are back and talking about the deal of the century with Ryan Dawson. And so, you know, a question always becomes, so obviously this deal is not a deal, it's a steal. But you always wonder, are they biting off more than they can chew? Is this going to create more outrage? You had a Palestinian Authority that was, many people would say, collaborationist, as opposed to Hamas.
They capitulated a lot. If there is a silver lining on this terrible deal, is that it's so overt and so tactless that it's kind of like you quit boiling the frog and you just went ahead and threw it in, and it is going to be bad for public relations because it's way too over the top. Normally when they would do these things, they would couch it in language of you know, defense or some pretext, you know. They usually lie a little bit better. You know, when the U.S. occupied Iraq, there's always an excuse. Oh, we're protecting the Kurdish minority or something. There was no pretense on that. It's like Jerusalem goes to Israel, no right of return, and annexed territories for the settlements. They're all legitimate, and we're going to build some more after 4 years. Exactly what does Palestine get? Nothing. Oh, you get statehood. Over what? You know,
yeah. You have no control
Israel.
Over
the city of Jerusalem goes to Israel, and we're not allowed to return to our own houses. They have house keys and homes that still exist that they cannot go and see.
Yeah, no control over their borders, none over their coast, none over their airspace. You know, their aquifers, nothing. And some years ago, there was a Israeli minister of something. And he said, yeah, if they want to call it a state, they can call it a state. If they want to call it chicken soup, they can call it chicken soup.
Yeah. My favorite quote of Israeli Prime Minister is Golda Meir, who said, we can never forgive the Arabs for forcing us to kill their children.
God. Oh, God. And there's a Broadway
this
musical.
This is the kind of psychopath you're dealing
yeah,
with.
Yeah, and a Broadway musical that glorifies Golda Meir. So,
if you take a picture of her and Lyndon Johnson side by side, they look exactly alike.
They do look a lot alike. That's true. And nobody ever saw them in the same place. That's why such a photograph doesn't exist. So it makes you wonder. So the last thing I just want to visit is this plan, the deal of the century, has just been rolled out, and it's gotten very adverse response from the hitherto collaborationist Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas. The rest of the world looks at it, and I don't know how much they say, but everybody knows it's you know, this is not a deal. There's never really been any intent for a deal. It's just foot dragging while these other three things that you're trying to do go forward as you slowly, gradually take over territory and
cleanse. Trump has also said this is your last chance. So you're just inviting violence. Like, if this is what you're going to offer us, which is absolutely nothing, taking more territory and legitimizing it, and that's your last offer, then no thank you. And so Abbas is not going to cooperate on providing security anymore. They can pay for that. And there will be a retaliation because they have no other means.
So
you won't negotiate, so what's left?
And this is what they were doing anyway. They were doing all of this anyway. And in the past, you'd have somebody like Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or maybe even Jimmy Carter who were able to somehow frame it in a better light, provide some PR cover for it. And because Trump is so reviled by so much of the country and so much of the world, he's not able to do that. He's not able to dress it up and give it any kind of pretense of being fair. So
even Obama, even George Bush Jr., like George Bush Jr. had the settlements removed from Gaza. But they just relocated him to the West Bank,
right,
or whatever.
And
they tried this roadmap for peace under the Bush administration because they realized you cannot simultaneously colonize your neighbors and call for peace. Right? It's just antithetical. Like, you can't be colonizing people and saying, oh, you want a peace deal? I mean, the first thing you're gonna say is quit colonizing us, you know, quit occupying us, get rid of the blockade, get rid of these settlements. No place in the world is gonna put up with being racially colonized by force, right? Nobody. But they expect to be able to do that. And so all the adult presidents from, you know, the ones Carter especially, but all of them from Carter to Obama had at least some modicum of reason about no more home demolitions, or told them to freeze the settlements and Israel would ignore it. But at least they waved their finger at them, right? Trump's like, yeah, these are legitimate. We're keeping them and we're going to build some more.
Because there's a lack of pretense, maybe in a way it's better because people are going to know that that's what's actually happening.
In an odd way, you're right. Like they don't have this facade and deception, and you need to lie to get away with this kind of stuff because he's so in your face and over the top and obvious. It's a really bad PR move, and the whole world's going to be able to see it.
Yep.
Just like lying about WMDs in Iraq. So, why didn't you plant something and go point at them? Like, you lied, and then you didn't produce any, and everyone knows and remembers this.
Yeah.
And that's why that was so frowned on. So they didn't care.
So the deal goes, puts the pedal to the metal on, number one, getting more land, number two, making life unbearable for the Palestinians, but not so good on number three,
right?
The PR. Hey, we're up at the break, but we'll be right back.
The last point has to be said. The reason they're doing such an idiotic move, even though they know it's bad PR, is Netanyahu has to get reelected or he goes to jail.
Exactly. Okay, we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
homeowners. Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
How would you like to earn an extra $10,000 or more a month from the comfort of your home? We show you how to win with a home-based business opportunity. This could be one of the best financial decisions you ever make. Work from home, full-time or part-time. Plus, you'll never have to talk to anyone. Our professional sales team closes all your sales for you, and you keep 70% of all the sales made. You could be earning money while you're sleeping, shopping, working out, wherever you are, day or night. Our system goes to work for you. You can make a great income without any special computer skills or sales training. Plus, you get paid fast, within just 24 to 48 hours after our professional sales team closes a sale for you. Let us help you eliminate your financial concerns. You could be earning enough money to pay off debt, buy a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. We've got you covered. If you'd like to add an extra $10,000 or more a month to your portfolio, and you would like to know exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, go now to www.getstartedwithus.com. That's www.getstartedwithus.com. Again, that's www.getstartedwithus.com.
Welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio, and we have Ryan Dawson with us. So, Ryan, I hadn't been all that aware of it before. I knew that there was, among some people who call into Stormfront Radio, for instance, there are some people who are kind of fixated on Alexander Dugin, who, you know, I've been studying Russian politics for decades, and until I heard these people calling in talking about Alexander Dugin, I had never heard of him. So, not that I know everybody who's important, but if he was super important, I would have known about him. If he was anything like the importance that these people ascribe to him, I would have known about him. I didn't know about him. I've looked into him. I don't find him particularly interesting, but I don't find him nearly as important as they say he is. But so
I think they zero in on him because he fits the agenda. He's the boogeyman they want to elevate because they're already anti-Russia, and then here's a guy that legitimately is a dirtbag.
Well, I listened to Jeremy from Kentucky, who cooperates with this show. He was substituting for another RBN show in, I think, October 2018, and we have a frequent caller named William from Montana who took it upon himself to actually learn to read Russian, and he reads the Russian press every day. And he was saying, you know, even the boogeyman of Dugin doesn't necessarily match the Dugin that you would become familiar with if you read Russian. So, but whatever. I don't even care so much about that. But then this has kind of morphed into, well, Dugin controls Putin, which is absurd, but, you know, Dugin controls Putin, and he also controls Richard Spencer's, or his wife, and Richard Spencer, I guess, controls Trump. I'm not sure how it works. And and Chabad Lubavitch is at the top of everything. And it's gotten so absurd. Can you untangle this for us?
To go from Vladimir Putin down to Richard Spencer's wife means you got a problem with logic.
You know? But there are these people, and they put out these videos that get a fair number of views and circulation, and there are people who are otherwise smart and serious who seem to be, I don't know, taking it seriously. So what's going on here?
Well, there seems to be, like, I get this when I talk about 9/11, for example. There are almost like cults out there, mm-hmm. where if there's a certain narrative on something, they want to go more nuts. Because whatever is more paranoid and more kooky and more dramatic, it's sort of almost fun for them to believe in it or something. Not really care about the consequences in the world. Does it have to match reality? I've heard people even add to say, you know, maybe Iran is secretly Zog too, and just pretending to be against Israel or whatever. And I hear the same stuff about Russia.
North Korea, all those UN resolutions
where they vote against Israel, mm-hmm. and the U.S. has to veto it, the U.S., not Russia. Oh, that's just all fake, right? And giving them anti-air defense in Syria and shooting down Israeli planes, that's just to make it look like they're against Israel or whatever. You know, they just don't, they ignore everything that doesn't fit their narrative and zero in on any detail. Like, oh my God, Putin shook hands and has a picture with so-and-so. He must be Zog. I mean, it's evidence of nothing. Barack Obama shook hands with Gaddafi. We saw how that turned out. It didn't matter. It's politics. Now, Putin is a Russian nationalist, and he doesn't care about Palestinians one way or the other. He just does whatever he thinks is good for Russia.
But
Russian
isn't
interest.
He sowing discord in America?
That's the Clinton line. You know, they blame everything on the Russians. But if you want to know who has influence over the United States and U.S. politicians, it's Israel. It's not Russia. I mean, they all go to AIPAC and speak. They're not going to some Russian lobby. You can't even name a Russian lobby. They're going to AIPAC.
But everybody got along.
Billions of dollars to Israel. We put sanctions on Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, I mean, I was being sarcastic. I was, you know,
like, I know,
as if we all really got along until 2000 when Vladimir Putin became president of Russia. We all just got along in the United States. But among domestic American Jews, among the Jewish diaspora here in the United States, well, they've got support for Israel in the bag. You know, Democrats, Republicans, it's in the bag. It doesn't really matter. What they are focused on is Russia. And you look at the impeachment of Donald Trump. What was that over? That's over Russia policy, Ukraine and Russia. You know, the Congress...
They blame the DNC hack on Russia, even though... That WikiLeaks has said it wasn't Russia.
And they blame
the DNC.
Trump's election on Russia. But, you know, the impeachment was over a phone call. Congress had appropriated money for weapons for the Ukrainians to kill Russian soldiers, and Trump wasn't prompt in delivering it and perhaps even delayed it.
Michael Flynn was taken out because he talked to the Russians.
He simply talked to the Russian ambassador, which is absolutely fine. Everybody has a right to talk to the Russian ambassador. There's nothing wrong with that.
He did it at the behest of Israel.
And he didn't say
he wanted to ask him to do it.
Right. It was to get Russia not to...
Try and get them to change their security vote.
Security Council vote, yeah.
They didn't.
At the behest of... what's the guy's name? The son-in-law, Jared Kushner.
Kushner, yeah. Then Netanyahu got Kushner, who got Flynn to go do it, and Flynn gets in all the trouble, and Netanyahu and Kushner are removed from the story. But they didn't like Michael Flynn because when he was the director of the DIA, he rightfully and truthfully said that we were supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria, and so was Israel.
So, now, there's one last thing. So, somehow, Ryan, you and I are... I guess we're Zionist shills because we have a certain amount of admiration for Vladimir Putin. And the real patriotic thing to do, the real anti-Zionist thing to do, is to overthrow Assad and to fight against Russia and to...
We're attention terrorists.
Yeah, it's tariffs and everything.
Do I don't
everything.
Have any admiration for any government or government official. I think that ought to be clear. But the truth is the truth. And to say that Russia is run by Israel is just stupid. It's as stupid as saying
secret. Run by Chabad Lubavitch, when you get down
That's
to
even
it.
Dumber.
Because,
That's even dumber.
Because there were Russian oligarchs who went to a Chabad Lubavitch fundraiser. So obviously Chabad Lubavitch controls them, because anybody, if you go to an NPR fundraiser or a PTA fundraiser, obviously the PTA controls you. The fact that you give money to somebody means that they can control you, right? That's why politicians...
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
Reminds me of Alex Jones talking about Bilderberg nonstop. It's like the lowest rung out of influence. You want to know the influential parties out of Israel? It's Likud. It's AIPAC. It's not some weirdo Zionist sect. They don't control shit.
What I was trying to get to was kind of the absurdity, because typically you say if somebody gives money to somebody else, then that person, the person who gives the money, is buying the other person. And their logic is, if you're receiving money, then you own the person that gave you money. Which is the opposite of the typical logic, right? So the politicians then, therefore, they control AIPAC. Because AIPAC's giving them money, that's why the politicians control AIPAC.
It's upside-down logic, and you just look at what they do. It doesn't matter what people say, it matters what they do, and Russia has definitely opposed a lot of Israel's policies. And you can find incidents where they cooperated also. And that's normal. It's government.
Mm-hmm.
But when to say something is Zag is when, like, for example, the United States does things against its own interests for Israel. Russia doesn't do that. Russia does things in Russian interests. And if it happens to benefit Israel, it doesn't matter. They do things for themselves. They're not with them. They're not against them. They've definitely opposed them in Syria, and they definitely opposed a bunch of Jewish oligarchs in Ukraine. And Putin definitely threw a bunch of Jewish oligarchs in jail or had them exiled out of the country. And they did not want that to happen. It took generations to put these people in power, and Putin chased them out. So they hate him, and they blame him for everything. And the Zionist-run media has had a sustained anti-Putin screed ever since 2000. And so if you're going to say the media is run by the Zionists, which these same people will say that, and yet it completely hates Vladimir Putin, and the way they spin that is, but that's just to give them credibility or something. No, it's because they actually hate him, because he went against their interests. And that's that. And that's not that doesn't mean he's good. It's kind of like when people say Trump's a racist or something like that. I'm like, no, he's not, and I'll defend Donald Trump. That doesn't mean I like Donald Trump. It just means I'm telling the truth, you know? And there's just no nuance in politics anymore. I hate having to defend Donald Trump. But when people say, like, oh, he said this and that, most of the stuff they criticize him for is not true. Same thing with Obama. Obama's one of the worst presidents we ever had. $2 trillion in bailouts, started a war in Libya, et cetera, et cetera. But when they say, oh, he was born in Kenya, I'm like, no, he wasn't. the stuff they went on him about was... they shouldn't have criticized him about, and stuff they should have criticized him about, he got a pass for. And the same with Trump. They talk about grab her by the pussy and things like that. Lewd language, he said, and just ignore the fact that he scrapped the Iran deal, nearly started World War III, is allowing kids to starve to death in Yemen, continues to give Israel billions of dollars and grab his ankles for him, and is allowing them to aid Al-Qaeda in Syria. Like, those are the bad things.
Well,
those will get brought up by Democrats.
Here's one other thing, and maybe you agree and maybe you don't, but a lot of the people who criticize him for all sorts of things, from day one, there was a whole bunch of people who often were the same people who were criticizing George Bush for the Iraq War. And they ignored the fact that Donald Trump's in his election bid, he was critical of the Iraq War, and He was always critical of the Iran deal, but in terms of a lot of the foreign policy, it was non-interventionist. Why can't we be friends with Russia? Let's try to get along. Let's withdraw
and
from NATO.
To a degree, he did in Syria. He stopped covert aid in 2017. In July, he stopped covert aid to mercenaries in Syria, so that he did actually roll back and keep some of his campaign Trump promises there.
And my contention,
he was really bad on Iran and always was.
My contention is that had the people who pretended, and I'm saying now pretended, to be anti-war back in the first decade of this century, had they not all put on pussy hats and gone on a massive freakout and refuse, the idea of any kind of cooperation with the Trump administration, refuse anything but resistance, resist, we must resist, that they really, to a large extent, drove him to the neocons, who had been never Trumpers. They had been never Trumpers, but the neocons are smarter than the at least the progressive sheeple. I think
they got the identitarians on the anti-Russia screed, and it started with saying, "Oh, Putin's against Pussy Riot," which is the name of a band that ran around naked in a church or whatever, which you
called. And filmed themselves having sex in a in a Russian art
museum. So they
said,
"See, he hates gay people. He hates women, and." There are people that, they got heat vision looking for racism, sexism, any kind of accused prejudice, right? Because that social currency, if you can find someone and label them any of those things and browbeat them about it, it elevates your status. And so among Democrats, they jumped on the chance because anytime you accuse anybody of racism, sexism, or whatever, they're all like, oh, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. They all want to go in because this is condemnation culture. And so they all fell for that. And so Bernie Sanders, Hillary, you go down the list, they're all saying Assad must go, he's an evil person, look, Russia's on the other side and they're bad because Putin hates gays and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got all these Democrats to support a war in Syria, and this is the Democratic leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Bush had done that, hell no, they'd be against it. But if Obama did it, which he did, then they support it. And so you notice when Trump bombed Syria, all the talking heads, all the Democrats, all the neocons, you go, oh, hey, he's being presidential
Wolf
now.
Wolf Blitzer said he's finally presidential. That's right.
Yeah. All of them said it. CNN, they were all giving a love fest to Trump. Like, oh, I guess he's going after Assad. That's what we want. He's opposing Russia and going after Assad. Because what opposition to Russia really means is supporting al-Qaeda in Syria. But you can't sell, let's support al-Qaeda in Syria. Right? They say moderate rebels, whatever. So you have to say opposing Russia because Russia interferes in our elections and he got Trump elected and blah blah blah. But the reality is they used identitarian politics to get people to hate Russia so that they would not support the war in Syria because of any kind of like reason. The gas lies and stuff came later. It was to go against Russia. And a lot of Democrats, they don't stand for anything, they just hate things. And so you get them, it's what they hate more. You're voting against Republicans more than you are for Democrats. And they're just against Trump, against Putin, against anybody that they can accuse of racism, xenophobia, etc. And they did the same thing to Trump. They didn't criticize him for the Iran deal or Yemen or Ukraine, none of that. It was, he's a racist. He hates Mexicans. He's against immigration. It was all this identitarian nonsense. And that's the fuel they're using, is identitarian politics against both Russia and Trump. Now, I think you can criticize Russia and Trump, but for completely different reasons than the given ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to Syria, we should be on the side with Russia, and we should wipe out al-Qaeda. Because what's the alternative? I don't care what you think about Assad. Al-Qaeda is a lot worse, and mm-hmm. that's the other option.
Mm-hmm. So, I think the neocons, and a lot.
Same with Saddam, by the way. It's not like I love Saddam, but I did not want a war in 2003
right.
because look what happened after. It got even worse.
So the neocons and a lot of the other elements of Jewish leadership have really been very savvy because they've got basically a rent-a-car president, a disposable president. They can do what they want with him. And it doesn't matter if he gets reelected or not. If he gets reelected, then hopefully, from their point of view, they can continue to get him to do things. They get him to do things that aren't popular, and then he can take the blame for it, right? And they don't have to take the blame for it. It was President Trump. President Trump ordered the assassination of Soleimani. What does AIPAC have to do? What does Israel? I mean, Bibi Netanyahu. who came out the next day.
Well, it was an Israeli working group that came up with that plan, and Trump was reluctant. He said, I won't do it unless they kill an American.
Right. But that's not what people know. And so,
right, that story is, it has been in newspapers and whatnot, but that's not the story people know. And the American that was killed had been an American all of 7 days or something. It was a Iraqi translator. I think he's a sacrificial lamb. And they said, okay, kill Soleimani. And that ended up getting our bases attacked. And it turns out now hundreds of Americans were injured from that.
Yeah, and it took place in the context of this whole impeachment thing. Well, we're up on the last break. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a 4-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once per year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back. So we just have a few minutes left. Could you tell us about projects you're working on? And I know you've been doing a lot with Jeffrey Epstein. Does this Weinstein thing have anything to do with Jeffrey Epstein?
Yeah, I have some map videos that tie those two together, because Weinstein hired Black Cube at the behest of Ehud Barat, and Ehud Barat was visiting Epstein. It was financed by Wexner and Epstein. Wexner also financed Epstein and helped him get into Bear Stearns, etc. So that is a whole web of pedophiles and rapists, and they should They should. Everyone needs to pay close attention to this Weinstein trial, because that he's just the one that's kind of in the spotlight. But that rot and that disgusting activity is pervasive all throughout Hollywood. Everyone's been saying it forever, and so it's good that he's going down. Now, I will say there are also women that use sexuality to get deals and get ahead, and that's wrong too. But of the two, rape is obviously the greater crime. And so even if some may have done that, he clearly raped people, and he belongs in jail for the rest of his life. And as for projects, I am working on one film about Newmek, which is an area in Apollo, Pennsylvania, where basically Israel stole uranium from the United States to illegally build nuclear weapons. And they stole technology as well. And that changed Middle East policy forever. And as a backlash to that...
And that was what, early, like 1960s, 61?
This starts in the 50s. Mm-hmm. They started stealing uranium from the Nautilus program. And I've done interviews about it with Roger Motson, Grant Smith, and others going over it in podcasts. But we decided to make a good visual film. And so it'll be one and done that everyone will be able to share and show how, you know, they're accusing Iran of building a nuclear bomb, right? That's why Netanyahu went in with his cartoon and his red line, and that's why there's sanctions on Iran, right? That's why we have an Iran deal to prevent them from building a nuclear bomb, which they're not even building. Meanwhile, Israel stole nuclear material and tech from the United States and illegally, secretly built hundreds of nuclear weapons, and they're not subject to an inspection. Mm-hmm. They're not part of the Non-Proliferation Treaty like everyone else.
But they're God's chosen.
Right, yeah. God said we can have nuclear weapons. What are you going to do with those? I mean, how...
Well, yeah, here's the thing.
That's the ultimate weapon of mass destruction.
What are you going to do with them?
It kills indiscriminately whole cities.
I mean, what are you going to do with intercontinental missiles like the Jericho missile? What, I mean, that's not for attacking Iran. That's not attacking for attacking Hezbollah. Why do they have to have intercontinental missiles like the Jericho missile? Why do they need to have these submarine-based, you know, the Dolphin submarines, that some of which were given to them by Germany, given by the country, a country that they'd be happy to nuke?
Squeezed out of guilt.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, we got a lot of problems. All right, so...
People should be asking these questions. I hope this film will blow the lid off of what they did and the cover-up on how much the CIA knew about it, the U.S. knew about it.
Well, how about Jewish organizations?
General, but especially nuclear weapons, and nothing was ever done. The Kennedys tried a couple things, and both of them ended up dead. Robert by a Christian Palestinian, allegedly.
So wasn't the Zionist Organization of America or its related organizations, weren't they involved in this?
Yeah, I think it was called the Zionist Council of America, and then it became the Organization of America, and now it's called AIPAC. And it's a little confusing because there's another organization called the ZOA, but that's not the original ZOA. But yeah, they were being forced to register as a foreign agent.
Mm. Okay.
By the Attorney General. Which
you'll have to come back because we don't have time to get into that, but it's something I'd certainly like to get into. But thank you very much for coming on the show.
No problem. I have a lot on the Kennedys.
All right. Well, we'll get into that. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.